Hello and welcome back to another episode of For the Love of a Franchise. I am your host, P-Dubs, and joining me, as always, is Tony.
Hello.
And this time we are escaping the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. After we said that the second one was very different from the first one, was a bit unusual. Yeah, and couldn't be any further away from what I thought the Planet of the Apes was about. And I will be up front. I've got about a page of notes, and that was it. Because it's like watching a 1970s like soap opera. We'll kick off with that. It starts off as you'd expect it to, with the pods, the space pods, making a reappearance for the third time. They certainly don't do very well. They don't do very well though, those space pods.
No.
And I certainly wasn't expecting it to travel back in time. It's a very strange thing. So, having done the first two, obviously they're time travel stories, basically for the most part. This is like Back to the Future Part 3. it's very, very weird. But we do get some flash forwards. Obviously, there are some times.
But there's some great setups in this first bit. The three of them stood on the beach, and taking their helmets off. It's just a fantastic reveal.
It really is.
Military.
Yeah, to be fair, I picked up. I even wrote it's the apes, right? Before it even started. And then I just wrote down, woohoo, time traveling monkeys. but the good thing is, it is the monkeys that we know.
Yeah, yeah. So Roddy McDowell's back, we should say, for this one, because he wasn't in the second one.
No, exactly. Yeah, very much so. But there's some really strange turns. Like that, even the fact that they know they can talk and they're still going to put them in the zoo. Yeah. I think it's...
Well, they know they're intelligent, don't they? Because they don't speak straight away. But they know they're intelligent, but they still stick them in a bloody cage. Some of them think they're intelligent. Some of them mimicry, of course.
And that brings us up to another one of my points. That god-awful gorilla suit on the gorilla that's next in the cage next to him.
Yeah, and not the only dodgy one we'll see in the film.
And to be honest, all of them are bad this time. They're nowhere nearer the standard of the first two. We pointed out on the second one that, like, the background apes weren't great. This time, all of the apes aren't great. When the lead apes talk, the masks move. Like, the foreheads become like this big bulgy thing, because when the jaw starts moving, the whole mask is moving with them, not just the parts that they need it to go. It's awful in that sense. And as I said, I haven't got a load of notes, but obviously this is, having not seen the next film, assuming this is the start of the takeover in this.
Certainly the end.
Yeah. But obviously we'll get to that when we get to the next film. Then we get the offering of the banana. And she's just
like that.
Yeah, I don't like bananas.
It's a great way to sort of reveal they can speak.
Yeah, like she'd taken everything they'd given her while she was in the zoo to then turn around and just go, I'm going to talk to them because I don't like bananas.
And she just so affronted, isn't she, by the giving her a ruddy banana.
Yeah, of all things, a banana. And at that point, I kind of have to point out, I never expected there to be a courtroom drama in Planet of the Apes.
No, but again, it's quite amusing as well, that the way the way they play it. And
yeah, this is very much a different film to the first two. It's not until kind of the end sequence that things kind of go the way the first two films. For the most part, this film,
it's quite light, really, through most of the film. It's to kind of reverse the first one with them being the fish out of water.
Yeah. Yeah, but in a very different way, in a funny way.
Yeah.
This time, rather than the dark kind of the apes are trying to capture us way that the first film was.
We see them going, getting shopping for clothes and going to the sort of going to parties. And
and that's very much where kind of the soap opera of the 1970s comes in, is with that sequence. Because Montage Man does make an appearance with the apes going and doing their day-to-day kind of things. And an old-school Los Angeles as well. We see Beverly Hills. It's quite prominent during that sequence. We also see the Hollywood Brown Derby, obviously a well-known eatery that's been replicated by Disney, in multiple different locations. There's a copy of it at Walt Disney World. It's been used as signage in other parks. So it's quite a famous restaurant that's only seen in the background, really. The montage of them doing the dress up and picking out what clothes they're gonna wear. It's just so left field compared to what we've seen in the previous films. It is quite funny. And I said, oh, how I didn't know I needed this at that point. it's ridiculous. But then we get the sequence of finding out she's pregnant.
There's a little bit of a mood shift in the second half of the film, where we get the scientist that was on the panel, really sort of take them in hand, etc. And then a little bit drip fed about Earth's future, and you see the president even discussing something that's like 2,000 years in the future, or whatever, or 20,000 years in the future, and it's an interesting point, because who are they to decide at that point on humanity's future, really? When you're talking about something where they'll be long gone.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And we also get, obviously, she drinks while she's pregnant as well, which I thought was a
yes,
which was a bit strange. As we said, it takes a real horrible turn. In that kind of the back quarter of the film, when they realise what's going to happen. So let's talk about that. Go on.
I was going to say that we're sort of in a... I'd written down in my notes, in one of the notes in this back half of the film, was Carl!
That
great little turn from Carlin Montalban.
Yeah.
Quite a good guy for a change.
Very, very strange. I did say at this point, it is very much a film of its time. It is clearly a 70s film. Unlike the first two, the first two you could kind of, while they look like they're from the 60s.
Yeah.
You can see why they tried to remake it in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, the fact that the film is set in the 70s does date this one a little bit.
Yeah.
In terms of the background and the objects, etc., and the storytelling, something. Yeah, with the first two films, because they're futuristic, they don't age quite so badly in that respect.
No, very much so. And then we get the bad turn for the apes. The prison break is quite good. I think that's probably the best bit of this film.
It's and it's quite shocking as well. The moment where he kills the guard.
Yeah. With no thought. He just does it.
Yeah, just pushes him up against the wall without thinking, and boom, just because he forgets his own strength. And it is quite a shocking little turn in the film.
Yeah. And then, as we talked about the gorilla earlier on, that makes a return later on. Once we get the baby chimp, appearance.
Yeah, so it all goes very well. We get a proper real baby chimp to start with.
Yeah. Yeah, that was surprising. Because my wife came and sat next to me while I was finishing it off. And she went, "Is that a real baby?"
Yeah.
I was like, "Yeah, it's a real baby chimp." So that was a bit of a surprise. And then, do you know what? This reminds me of the last franchise that we watched, the Dirty Harry stuff. The shootout at the end. It's very reminiscent of what we used to see at the ends of Dirty Harry films.
Yeah, because it's quite bloody as well, really.
Yeah.
In terms of their two fates. And quite sad as well to see that their three-story arc finishes that way, really.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But at least they took him out as well.
Yeah. It was quite funny.
Yeah, very much so. And then obviously we're left with the baby chimp.
Yeah, because the old bait and switch. That's an old cliche, isn't it?
Yeah,
wasn't their baby.
Yeah,
and that leads us to one scene that I sort of written down here where it covers the makeup. Mama, it just looks so freaky, that costume. It's clearly a costume one at the end, and that.
Yeah.
The toddler version looks so creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
For me, I mean, it's all right as a film, but that last couple of seconds is quite laughable, really, and kind of just highlights the budget limitations of the time.
Yeah, very much so. And I think, as I say, it was a noticeable drop as well. Those first two, you'd think the first one would be the lowest budget one. Where they would struggle. But so far, out of the three films, it's the one that's had the best makeup.
Yeah.
Which is very strange.
Was low on this one? We get to the fifth one.
Well, yeah, let's get there. We've got a couple of months before that. We're all right. Before we kind of wrap up with our final thoughts, was there anything that you kind of wanted to add?
I think no, there's just I said there's some, for me there's some nice bits in it. I think their relationship between Bradford Dillman's character and them is quite interesting as well. They choose him as another friend alongside Taylor. They consider him a friend. So I like Montalban's appearance in the film. There's nothing that's never improved by Montalban appearing in it. I like the little segment. It's one of these films which more the bits are better than the sum of the parts. I like the little courtroom sequence, and accordingly, it almost just gives the game away as to their futures. The little exchange with the president, I'll be honest, I prefer this to the previous one in terms of the story. It's completely just a replay of the first film in reverse. I think you probably agree.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very strange film to kind of get your thoughts out about because it is so different in style.
From what we've had in the previous two, it's a complete left turn, isn't it?
Yeah, it's telling the same story as the first one, just in a different way.
Yeah, yeah. And I think watching it now, it comes across as quirky as well, because we're watching a film which would have been, of course, set in the present then when it was come out, but we're watching it in our past as well.
Yeah.
Which I think adds that element, like I say, of it being a little bit dated and possibly a little bit clunky in places.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And as we said, it's clearly a lower budget.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because I mean, what they wanted, three main makeups for, well, two and a bit, because the one character doesn't last very long.
Yeah.
The light makeups and two not mostly non-speaking makeups, isn't it? Because compared to the previous film, we had all those background masks, etc. So
you
can clearly see most of the budget would have been on location shooting, probably, for this one.
Yeah, very much so. But then again, it's a lot of it's in Hollywood, so
yeah,
probably wouldn't have been even that much to do that either. So yeah, it's a very strange way of telling a story in this franchise, I think, is how I would put it, because it is a science fiction fantasy franchise, yet outside of the fact that the two leads are apes, you could have put any character in those roles.
Mm.
And it would have just been a 1970s film.
You could, within the science fiction genre, you could swap them for robots or aliens or anything, couldn't you?
Yeah.
And the story kind of almost play out.
Key point. Or they could just be humans.
Yeah.
That are on the run.
Mm. Yeah.
It's a very strangely put together film in that sense. Whereas part two, where it is quite outrageous for what it was. It was a completely left field turn, the second one. It still felt like it fitted in a fantasy science fiction franchise. Mm. Whereas this one, I just felt like it could have been anything. Unfortunately. but yeah, my final thoughts for me, I think the second one is more fitting for this franchise than the third part is. Mm. So we will see. But that wraps up our thoughts, score, I think. You go for it, because I hadn't even thought about it.
I would probably, I can't remember when I gave the last one, put this in the kind of mid-70s, because there's enough in it that's enjoyable. But I'm conscious of weighing up against the next film, which I've got a different score for. So I would probably give it about a 73, maybe.
Yeah. I'm going to be lower. I'm going to go for about 68, I think. Just because, as I said, outside of the fact that there's a couple of apes in it, the story could have been told with anybody in those lead roles. Mm. Might not have done as well.
Yeah.
But I still feel like it could have been written as anything.
Yeah.
So that kind of knocks my score down for it.
Yeah.
So that wraps up our thoughts on Escape from the Planet of the Apes. We will be back next time to talk the fourth part in the franchise, which is Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. As we said the last time, these films were all rolled out within 6 years of each other. So the first one was 68, 70, Escape was 71, Conquest is 1972, and Battle for the Planet of the Apes was 1973. So these were rolled out really quickly. So nothing's going to change much in terms of style and substance. But we will be back to talk that fourth part of the franchise on the next episode of For the Love of a Franchise. Thank you very much, Tony, as always, for joining me. And we will see you on the next one.